Welcome to Smart Money Simplified with Brent Mikosch from The Wealth Stewards. In this podcast, Brent discusses some of the most important and interesting topics of the day as they relate to finance, the economy, and beyond. Now, on to the show.
Hello, and welcome to the Smart Money Simplified podcast with your host, Brent Mikosch. Brent, my friend, it is good to see you again. Lots of exciting things going on, so I know you've been very, very busy.
Have been very, very busy. You know, for those that have listened at least to the last few episodes, we are in the very front end of being now in the independent RIA space. So a lot of moving parts to make that happen. But you always still have some time to relax and have a cocktail or two. And that was the experience I had this past weekend, where on Sunday afternoon, I had the good fortune to share some wine with a good friend of mine, Kristen Schroyer, and also her sister, who I will add was maid of honor in my wife and my wedding, and also their parents. And it just kind of brings me, you know, my wife and I, we both love wine. And what's phenomenal about wine, it's not so much even the bottle that you're drinking, but the company that you spend that time with. And so it's a favorite topic of mine. It's one that we're going to discuss today. So I'm here today with Kristen Schroyer. And so Kristen is the Chief Impact Officer and also co-founder of One Hope Wines. So we're going to talk a lot about what it's like to be an entrepreneur in a space that from the outside looking in is really exotic and romantic, but at the same time, like any business, there's still challenges and struggles that you face to not only get a business like that off the ground, but also maintain momentum. And so with that, Kristen, just tell me, you know, what I always find most fascinating when I get into these stories with people is how you got to where you are today. So people on the outside looking in say, okay, Chief Impact Officer, you have a co-founder of a wine company that has really a national footprint now. How did you possibly get to that point?
So for whatever reason, I always was fascinated with wine. I think a lot of it was because I was raised by parents that were always drinking wine at dinner, always dragged me along to these trips to Napa or to Temecula. So having to go to what at the time was very boring to me, these, you know, winery tours and the production facilities. And then in high school, I started working in the restaurant industry. And I remember working in the restaurants and seeing these wine reps that would come in, and they'd wheel in these big old bags filled with wine bottles, and they'd sit at the largest table we had at the restaurant and sample wines with my manager. Meanwhile, I'm seeing everybody else like hustling, stressed out of their mind, crazy, thinking like, this looks like a really fun job that you could still be involved in the restaurant industry while learning about wine. So for whatever reason, at that time, I was just a senior in high school. I thought, I want to work in the wine industry. And so when I was at, I went to University of Arizona, and my freshman year, I noticed there was a career fair. And at the career fair, Gallo Wine Company was there hiring. So I marched up there as a freshman. Keep in mind, I'm still only 18 years old, saying, hey, I really want to work for your company. And I think they liked me. I gave him my resume, and he looked, he's like, you're only a freshman.
You're 18.
Yeah. Nice try. Let's keep in touch, you know, come back and visit me. And every time they'd come back to a career fair, which was a couple times a year, I'd always just stop by and say hi to the recruiter. And so my summer before my senior year, at that point, I was 21, they gave me an internship to work in Southern California. And they didn't do internships at the time, but I think I've just always been a very persistent person. And they said, okay, fine, come aboard, work for a distributor in Southern California. And I was essentially a merchandiser, where I worked alongside their sales reps in grocery stores and helped build these big wine displays in grocery stores.
Lesson here. I want to interject on that. So you first were connected with these folks through a career fair when you were 18.
Yes.
And you kept in contact for 3 years. How often were you reaching out to them and saying, hey, I'm still here. I'm not 21 yet, but I'm still here. How often would that look like, that communication?
Well, I got the card of their head of recruiting, and he was the same gentleman that was there every single time they'd come to University of Arizona to recruit. And so every time they'd be there, we'd meet for lunch, or I'd stop by the table and say hi. So it was just more so keeping in communication with that person. And they didn't offer, like I said, internships, but I somehow convinced them to give me one. And so I moved to Southern California, and I lived with my cousin who lived there at the time. She let me stay with her. And yeah, I was essentially a merchandiser in grocery stores in Southern California, but I loved it. It was so cool. And so that was the job out of college, would be a sales rep. Like, it's basically doing, it's very similar to what I was doing in the internship. So they were like, yeah, just come back if you want to, have a job after you graduate, it's yours. So if you can imagine living, Tucson, Arizona is great, but you know, when you're offered to sell a wine, to move to Newport Beach, California and sell wine, it sounds super glorious and like fantastic. It's like, yes, absolutely. I want to move to Newport Beach and sell wine. But it is interesting work selling wine in grocery stores, because it's a, like you're just like we were saying, distribution of wine is really difficult. It's a really hard job. I mean, we were waking up at 2-3 in the morning. I remember my roommate in Newport, she'd be coming home from the bars when I would be going to work. Like that's how early you had to wake up, because people in grocery stores, they're there super early, putting everything that's delivered to the shelves. And you had to, as a Gallo rep, you had to be friends with everybody within the grocery store, because sometimes you might want to build a side stack in the produce department. So yeah, like me and Henry, the produce guy, are BFFs, and he's going to make sure, you know, carve out a spot next to the bananas for me and in the dairy section and whatnot. But that was my first job out of college. I learned so much. But what was really cool about that job was that's where I met all my future One Hope co-founders. I didn't know it at the time, but that's where we all met. And we bonded because we had this really unique job that we started at 3 a.m. So we'd get out at like 3 p.m. in the afternoon. And what do you do when you're 23 years old? You go
happy
right
hour.
To the bar. Happy hour. Yeah. Exactly. So we would meet up at, it was the Yard House, Triangle Square there in Newport Beach all the time. And we would just hang out. We got to be the best of friends. And then it was our first October selling wine in grocery stores that we saw everything in the store going pink for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And so this would have been October 2005 when cause marketing was really, really big. There really wasn't any cause brands out there, just a lot of companies teaming up with, typically at that time, Susan G. Komen was really big, like the Yoplait yogurts, pink lids. And but it was interesting because as we were stocking the shelves to help, you know, the dairy guy give us to like us and all these things, we were helping stock the shelves for these products. So we noticed that the brands that were giving back, they were selling a lot faster than the other ones. And then we also noticed that when October was over, that everything went back to business as usual. And some of these really big companies that could be giving 20 million back were giving 20,000 and capping it at that. And then our biggest opportunity we saw was there was nothing represented in the wine aisle. So we were building all these wine displays. There was no brands that were giving back. And as you mentioned, Brent, like wine is such a special product. It brings people together. It makes such a beautiful gift, or you're enjoying it with your loved ones. So that's where we, at Yard House, at Happy Hour, we were just talking like, man, we should just create a wine company that gives back. What a great idea that would be. And most people that have a good idea don't do anything with it. So I don't think any of us thought we would ever do anything with it at the time. It was just really good talk over a beer and sure, chicken wings, you know? But then fast forward about a year later, I moved up to Napa to Sonoma. I was still with Gallo, but working in their tasting rooms up there. And then Jake Cloberdance, who's now our CEO, he gave me a phone call. He's like, Kristen, I had my best friend, she was diagnosed with blood cancer. Like, we're at this point, it was just the eye-opening moment for him. It's like, if we're going to start this company that gives back, I'm all in. Are you in? And at this point, I was living up in Napa, no kids, no mortgage. You know, my parents, they're, when I told them about this idea, they're like, oh my gosh, Kristen, you should totally do it. So quit my job up there and moved down to Southern California. And we started what was initially called Hope Wine, later evolved to One Hope, out of the backs of our cars, which is illegal. But we didn't even know that. We thought we could just bottle. We found a custom crush facility. We bottled our own wine. We came up with our own label, literally would drive around in my Honda CRV and try to sell it to people. And if I did sell it, I would just be like, okay, write me a check. I'll go get it out of the back of my Honda. And they're like, no, Kristen, you need a licensed distributor. I'm like, I do. How much we knew about the industry. So we had to learn a lot as we went.
Were you concerned, because you're working for Gallo, a major, major heavyweight player? I mean, they could be, as far as, they could potentially be the largest wine producer in the United States. They got to be up there.
They are. At the time, I think they still are the largest winery in the U.S. Yeah.
So were you concerned about what was leaving them like? Did you leave on good terms? Were you concerned that there was going to be any kind of blowback from them? Because obviously, you know, they're a monster, and so they probably don't care about a small producer as much. But were you concerned about potentially going into competition with them at that time?
At that time, no. I think because we were just so young and fearless, there's something so special that happens, that like when you're in that mindset as a young kid, that you're You really are fearless. So I don't think that thought crossed our mind. I mean, because Gallo is such a big company. We thought that they would be even just more so excited about us, for us, that we are taking this awesome training that they gave us, and we're going out and doing some great things with it. So that's a good question, but it is funny. I don't think we were at all nervous about that. Of course, they were sad that they lost 8 of their great Dynamite salespeople at the same time, but we also knew they're so big that they'd be just fine without us too.
Now, how difficult was it now to source the grapes, source the bottling? Did you pretty much understand that process at the time, or were you making it up as you went along?
We were kind of making it up as we went along. We did find a place that's called like a custom crush facility, and it was in Sonoma County. So we went up there and we got to like sample like a few of the wines that they had available, and they would just bottle it for us. So we didn't have the opportunity to, you know, make the wine ourselves. It was more so like, pick your juice, you come up with the label and kind of do it that way. So, and our wine, it was never bad by any means, but we've come such a long, long, far way in making our wine so incredible today. But that was how we initially did it. But we didn't grow the grapes ourselves or anything like that.
So you basically, you tested some wine that they bought probably in bulk around.
Yep.
You designed a label, you slapped it on there, and you're selling it out of the back of your car.
Exactly.
And so what put a stop to...
Yeah, it was, and we thought the label looked so good. You probably remember it, Brent, because you probably saw our first label. It was, imagine like Google imaging pink breast cancer awareness ribbon, and then it not being even high enough resolution because it was kind of pixelated a little bit and it said hope on it. That's basically what our first label looks like. So of course, now we look back at it thinking, wow, how did we sell that at all? Because it looked so terrible. But at the time, we thought it was the coolest thing ever. So
tell me about the selling process. So you've got your wine now. You're going to take on the entire world with it. How did you get your first sales?
So we would literally just, like, I remember parking my car in a shopping complex and just wheeling it around to people, just walking in, not even having an appointment off the street.
No liquor license. Then,
no. Exactly. Literally door-to-door sales pretty much. And that was when we quickly realized, okay, we need our own licensed distributor. And that's a whole other difficult thing for alcohol, because distributors won't just carry any brand. You need committed accounts in order to do it. And then, so we thought that, you know, once we got a distributor, that was it, because they were just going to sell the heck out of our products. We found a distributor that would carry us. They were really, really small. And I remember we signed with them in like October. And so we got our first big month's sales. November is one of the biggest months in the wine industry. So I remember we were so excited. We're like, oh my gosh, we're totally going to crush it. Can't wait to see how much product they sell. We got our depletions back. And in the entire state of California, they sold 11 cases of it for us. So we're like, okay, well, that's not going to cut it. We're clearly going to have to get out there and continue to hustle it ourselves and get more states to carry us. And so that's when I moved back to Arizona, was when we got Arizona distribution with the same distributor, just their Arizona affiliate. And so I literally moved back in with my parents, and because, you know, nobody's getting paid in the early days when you're starting your own business. And I launched the brand out here. And then we started to open up more and more states with distributors. And so I was just pretty much living on airplanes, I felt like, for the first 5+ years of One Hope, just going to these distributors, begging for them to carry us. And they're like, no, you need committed accounts. But then committed accounts won't carry you unless if they know you have a distributor lined up. So it's a crazy process. And then each state has its own legalities and stuff too. So a lot of learning.
When did you first sense that you're getting some traction now? Because that this is no longer a possibility that's going to work, but it clearly now is going to work.
I think just getting texts from my friends, they're starting to see it out there. So I remember being at the airport one time and I got a text from one friend that was in New York. Oh my gosh, I'm at a restaurant and I saw you. And then another text from a friend in the Bay Area that they saw. So just when people are starting to recognize it and see it out there. But I think there's so many moments where you think, oh my gosh, this is it. We're finally getting there. But there's just so you realize there's so many other hurdles you kind of have to go through. But what was fun, once we got our brand nationally distributed, so it was available in every single state, then we could start to go to some of these bigger national accounts, because national accounts love our brand. They totally get it from a marketing perspective and how we can make a really big impact together. So it was really fun when like the Top Golfs and the Whole Foods and places like that would then commit to our brand, because they knew that we could distribute in every single one of their states.
Now let's talk about the philanthropy aspect of it in terms of, you know, what does that model look like?
So it's evolved since we started. When we first started, like I mentioned, it was initially Breast Cancer Awareness Month and giving back year round and having no caps on what we donate. So we had three varietals and we assigned a cause to each varietal. So our Chardonnay gave back to breast cancer research. We had a Cabernet supporting children with autism, and then a Merlot going to AIDS research. And then we added more. We had a Sauvignon Blanc, and that one supported the environment, and a Zinfandel that supported our troops. And we started to keep on adding these wines that gave back. And we would team up with a specific nonprofit for those. So we worked with, you know, Gateway for Cancer Research and AIDS Lifecycle, Autism Care and Treatment Today, and all these, you know, we had like these strong partnerships. But what was hard with when you're selling your wine through distributors, it's kind of like the game of telephone, because I would tell them all of this, and then they would go try to repitch it to their accounts. And our give back message got really confusing because we were supporting so many different causes. And then essentially they would just be like, oh yeah, One Hope, they're the charity wine, which isn't necessarily the best sales pitch they could do. So slowly we started to kind of evolve our giving. And as we were growing our distribution and doing this, what was really fascinating was the world of shipping wine direct to the consumer has changed so much in the past 17 years since we've done One Hope, because when we first started, we could legally ship to just four states. And now we can ship to, I think it's 43 or 44 states. Arizona just greenlighted for us like a couple years ago. And just this year, I think Oklahoma was a new one for us, and Kentucky. So what was so interesting about that was not only could we just sell in restaurants and hotels, but we could sell online and get wine to people's doorsteps so quick. And so through that, so many people were like, I love that your brand gives back. I love that you're supporting these causes, but how can you support this specific cause that I'm very passionate about giving back to? And so slowly over time, we kind of evolved from supporting specific causes from our specific wines to then being a platform to give. And anybody can shop to support a cause of their choice, and we give 10% of the purchase back to that. So whether it's a big global nonprofit like Charity Water, or your kid's Little League nonprofit or school PTO, everything in between, that's how we give back. And so to date now, we've given over $10 million, as you mentioned. But what's cool is we've supported over 40,000 unique nonprofits. And it's just simply by people, you know, sharing wine and giving hope. And as you mentioned, there's no way that we can quantify just the great conversations and good that's come over sharing a glass of the wine. Because a lot of times those conversations spark when you're opening up a bottle of One Hope.
No question. And so you all started, obviously, with Mondavi. But Mondavi is now part of your brand, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So that was a game changer for us, because when we first started, yeah, all coming from Gallo, again, we thought we knew everything we needed to know about starting our own wine brand. And we were very quickly put in our place and realized there was a lot that we had to learn. But we were at the San Francisco Food and Wine Festival with those original labels, like I mentioned, and like the okay-ish wine that we found from a custom crush facility. And a gentleman came up to our table and was very intrigued about us and what we were doing. And anyways, at the end of the event, we got his card, and it was Michael Mondavi. And so he's like, give me a call. I'd love to talk to you guys and see how I can help you out. And so after that, Michael Mondavi, his son, Rob Mondavi Jr., came aboard to help us with our winemaking and just sourcing great fruit. And having Rob Mondavi Jr.'s name behind us as the winemaker really helped establish us, because in the early days, when you're going around to accounts saying, hey, we're One Hope, we're a wine brand, we give back, people immediately thought, okay, that's great, you're doing that, but how's the wine? And so to have his name behind us, even with distributors too, it was a game changer. I have his signature on the back of our bottles. And to this day, they're big supporters of our brand. They're a big reason why we were even able to get that 10-acre property in Napa too, because you can't, not just anybody can swoop in and get these properties. You kind of have to have some of these families to vouch for you and say you're good people to have in the Valley.
So let's talk about that. So you went from obviously essentially outsourcing production of your wine. And I'm sure this is a scale business, so I'm sure there's still a lot of that. But now you actually have the wine estate. So what was the genesis to that move?
I never thought we would have such a gorgeous estate. That is Jake Kloberdans, our CEO. He is, And I don't know if you're the same with your business partner. There's kind of like the dreamer, the visionary, then there's the one that's always like, okay, but let's get to point B and point C before we look to point D and all that. So, but Jake, he Rob called him. He said, hey, Jake, there's a 10-acre property available right off Highway 29. I think you should get it. And we didn't have the money or anything to get it at the time, but Jake was able to source the funding for us to be able to close and get this beautiful 10-acre property on right off Highway 29, frontage facing. So the millions of cars that are driving up and down that all the time. It did have Cabernet and Sauvignon Blanc vines already on it and a really small home on the property. And so we closed on that, I think it was 2016, with the dream to build a beautiful winery and tasting room, and then just to have a place to call home. Because before that, we were always just this like virtual winery, because we did source our fruit from, you know, we bought from the Mondavis and did some sourcing from other areas, but there was no place that we could call home. And so I think once we did that with the Mondavis backing us and then having a place to call home, roots of our own, I think it just really helped establish our brand and take it to the next level. And so today, you know, we over the next 5 years after closing on that, we did build a state-of-the-art winery, and we have a beautiful tasting room, which we opened our doors August 2020, which was right amid a pandemic, so not the best timing to open a winery in California. So we were open and we were closed, we were open and we were closed, but that's been really the explanation point on this whole journey of starting One Hope, is having this beautiful place right across the street from that job that I took, my second job with Gallo when I moved up to Napa and Sonoma, which is kind of fun to see it there, but it's awesome. So I hope everyone that's listening comes and visits us in Napa.
So I can't imagine you're not growing all of your own grapes there. It's simply not enough property, but are you doing all your own bottling?
We don't do it. Can't even do all of our own bottling just because it is such a micro winery. So we do a lot of it there. Rob Mondavi Jr. actually even does some of his own micro bottling there. So it was really fun. I was there September a couple years ago, and I went and I brought my two young daughters with me because they had a Monday off of school, and we went for a walk and we came back and Rob was there with his two sons. His sons were shooting hoops because we have a basketball hoop right there in the crush pad. And he's like, hey girls, you want to come make wine with us? Like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then I think as my daughters were doing it, his kids kind of started to do it. So he was showing them the special yeast that he's using and like helping them like press the grapes and everything. And then he even made them fresh Cabernet, freshly squeezed Cabernet grape popsicles out of it.
Oh, awesome.
That's so cool. Sorry, I kind of went on a tangent with that one. But no, so we have a on property. We do about, you know, a couple thousand cases between the Sauvignon Blanc and the Cabernet that we produce there.
Is it estate labeled wine? I should know that.
Yeah, it's our estate. And all the wines that we bottle there are part of our iconic collection. So we do, you know, even we have some vines in Russian River that we'll drive in during harvest and bottle there. Our smaller production wines, we do bottle there. But we've even sourced some wines in Europe. We've got some Italian wines. We've done some French rosés and stuff before too. So we do some wines in other places, but that not every single bottle that we make is bottled there, but quite a bit of it is, especially the iconic and reserves.
Now let's talk about 2020. So you open your doors to the tasting room in the summer of 2020. Unique time for the country. We don't need to beat that horse. It's been beaten for a while. However, you were in a business that, although your tasting room may not have been doing so hot, was probably thriving otherwise. There was a lot of alcohol consumed in 2020 to 2021. What was One Hope's experience during that period of time?
Yeah, that was definitely an interesting time. It was because One Hope, as I mentioned, was set up to ship wine direct to people's doorsteps. Not a whole lot of wineries were doing that at the time. Even when I did work at Gallo, you know, we were doing paper order forms and we couldn't ship to that many states. But so when COVID hit, there were some states that the only way that you could buy wine was online, because states like Pennsylvania, that you can only buy liquor in state-run liquor stores, and state closed all those stores. So One Hope was set up to get wine to people's doorsteps in like 1 to 2 days when people were still waiting 5, 6, 7 days on their Instacart delivery, even to get their groceries. So we actually did very well during COVID just because, as you mentioned, people were drinking more during that time, and they needed it shipped to their, even if you could go to the grocery store, a lot of times people didn't want to leave their homes and wanted it shipped to their to their home. So, and we are also doing a lot of great give back initiatives during that time. So we, you know, we're seeing, especially in hospitality, talking about restaurants and everything, that was really hard for us to see because we did sell to so many restaurants and hotels, and everyone on that, in that side of the industry was trying to figure things out. So we put together a program for mothers in hospitality that were trying to, you know, these moms that were typically served in restaurants and got tips, and that's how they were paying for even just diapers and things like that. So we did a micro grant program for that. We raised tons of money for the COVID-19 fund simply by people just ordering wine and having it shipped to their homes.
And so when did you start to see sort of business return to normal following that spike during COVID?
It was probably like in 2022, certain states we started to see things open up, but I don't even think things are fully back to normal yet. I think everybody could admit their business is kind of looks like a roller coaster since then. But it was probably around 2022 when we started to see things kind of start to level out and more of our distributors start to place more purchase orders and that side of the business picking up. But it was hard for us because since we crushed it so much in 2021, we amped up our production. And with wine, it's not like you just press order and wine gets shipped to you. You have to make agreements and contracts with these grape growers. You have to source the fruit. It's a long process from grape to glass until you can make that happen. So we have had to deal with some inventory issues too, because we've had surplus of some things and not enough of others. And even things like I mentioned, our international wines, a lot of those were sitting on freight boats for a really long time, and we were just waiting for those to be delivered. So anyone in operations, it was just kind of a cluster during that time. But we're still seeing it. It's definitely leveled out quite a bit more now that everything is back to hopefully business as usual, but the world is certainly different since then.
Very much so. And I think that one of the ways that you were so well positioned was that you had ahead of time, maybe not even for different reasons, you would embrace this technology, which allowed you to get what, you know, your product direct to the consumer. Is there anything now, even from a technological standpoint or from a market standpoint, that you're seeing that you gives you the sense that this market is potentially shifting again? Or was it more just sort of back to business as usual, where you're selling to the distributors, some direct online? Is that mix returned to where it was?
I mean, the wine industry is definitely in a weird state right now, just because the younger generation is not, A, they're not drinking as much in general, and then B, they're not drinking as much wine as we did during at their age too. So that's something that's really interesting that we're looking at, and you've seen a lot of non-alcoholic options come in. But for the first time in 40 years, spirits outsold wine. This was last year they reported on that. So the spirits category is doing a really good job at marketing to this younger generation that's coming in, but they're not drinking that as much, and they just are not embracing wine like we did in our 20s. So that's an interesting thing that we're looking at on the One Hope side. And then again, we're just continuing to drive direct to consumer and open up more and more states and expand our distribution opportunities. We even have a direct sales channel too, which again, none of us had come from direct sales, but we had so many people, mostly women, that were coming to us saying, "Hey, I love your product. I love that you give back. I've always wanted to work in the wine industry, but I can't, you know, afford to change my career. How can I get involved?" And so that was another interesting thing that grew quite a bit for us during COVID, because so many people were either out of a job or were looking for extra ways to make money. And so we have a pretty large sales force of direct sellers. We call our cause entrepreneurs. And it's mostly women. It's like 99% women. We've had over 10,000 people join.
Oh, and wow. Okay.
They just love to share wine and learn about wine. When I first started in the wine industry, I got awesome training about wine, but we want to make that even greater and educate people about all that it takes to make wine. Because like you said, there's actually a dirty job, a micro's dirty jobs episode about making wine, because it's such a dirty, hard job to produce it. And it is so funny that the end product is this fancy thing. But yeah, so that's another thing that we want to continue to grow, that the future of One Hope is our direct sales channel. And, you know, all the wine offerings that we make, a lot to look forward to in the future.
So you're approaching now 20 years of being in this business very soon. What are the, what's the greatest lesson that you've learned through this entire entrepreneurial journey?
I think I try to always go back to that like 23 year old, because I was so blindly confident. And the older I get, I feel like from the, you know, the no's and the things like that, I always try to remind myself to go back to be that blindly confident person, because that's what inspired the brand to start. And we were, I don't know. So I remember walking into these distributor meetings and, you know, saying that we should sell 2,000 cases this year. And they were probably looking at me like I'm crazy. So I just learned to be, if you have a vision and a goal, to stick with it and be so confident, surround yourself by people that believe in that. We were talking about your wife, my husband. Like, I'm so thankful that I married somebody that supports me in this crazy journey. So yeah, surrounding yourself with people that support you and just want nothing but to see you succeed and grow. And yeah, those are some of the most important things I've learned. Because you think about it, with One Hope, we started with 8 co-founders. People are always so fascinated by that. And a couple of them have like peeled off to just be like, okay, like, that was awesome. And they're still very much family to us, but we've all stuck together. Like, we're just this, they are my family, and we love and support one another and we trust each other. So that's been really important too, is learning how important it is when you're starting something to make sure that you're doing it with the right people too. So you're doing it with the right people and you're having the right people around you to support you.
Well, and I think that you mentioned 6 are still in the game with you. I think that's, yep, that's remarkable. Because most businesses don't make it 1 year, let alone 5. If it's a single entrepreneur, let alone getting 6 personalities to get together and agree on things. That's a great place to end it, actually. What do you think is the key to the success of the 6 of you together continuing to move forward in this journey?
I think that our main mission of just giving back and changing the world and making it a better place, now that we're all parents, you know, we want to make the world so much better than it for our kids than it was for us growing up. So I think always having that as our North Star, and no matter what we're arguing about or what certain tactics we're trying to figure out, just knowing that's what we all came here to do. And that's our goal. That's really helped us and centered us in purpose. And I think it's really beautifully attracted the right people to want to work for us too. So we have the right people on our team that are helping us accomplish that.
That's fantastic. And I think, you know, this is one of the reasons I love doing this podcast, because in many cases we're able to speak to people where it's the quintessential American story, where in some cases you're young, some cases you're not. I think Greg Kroc was like 60 when he did McDonald's, but you have this great idea and you don't know any better in terms of what the challenges and the struggles are going to be, but you plug forward anyway and continue to move on one day at a time. And in your case, you're doing it with a product that I have thoroughly enjoyed over the years. Wish you very, very long continued success in the future. Now, Kristen, if people want to find you or learn more about One Hope or buy some of the product, how do they find you?
Yeah, so you can go to onehopewine.com and you'll see right on the top bar, you can select a nonprofit to support. So you can search any nonprofit that's out there. You can even, if you can't find it, you can search by the EIN number and it'll pop right up. So that's how you can buy One Hope. You can follow us on Instagram at One Hope, or you can follow me on Instagram at Wine Sipster. That's what we call each other, not sisters, but sipsters.
And you can know that you're doing good with the proceeds. A bit of the proceeds from every single bottle is going to go to a cause that you support. So that is fantastic.
Exactly. We track it too, so it's really fun. I mean, it adds up after a while.
Sure.
Of course, I'm biased, and I think our wine club is the best option out there, because you get free shipping and everything. But man, well, you get those recurring shipments and you see how much you've been able to fundraise. So like my cause of choice is Landon's Legacy, our friend Julie's foundation. Yep. And so it's just been really cool to see how much it's been able to raise just through my wine purchase. So and then I see on the back end all the checks that go out collectively, and it's impressive. And so many times these nonprofits will reach out to us, say, hey, I just received a donation. Like, who do I have to thank for that? And so that's what's cool, is we just like to send money into these great nonprofits' doors. We ask for them to do nothing in return. We just want to continue to support their mission just by simply getting together for a great glass of wine.
And so is any 501(c)(3) eligible?
Yep. Any 501(c)(3). Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for joining me today. And as always, it's great speaking with you, and I look forward to the next glass of wine that we have together.
Awesome. I look forward to it too. Thank you so much.
That was a great conversation. I thoroughly enjoyed listening to it. I really admire and respect what you're doing, Kristen. I think it's great. My only regret was that I didn't have a glass of wine to sip while I listened to
Yes, we should have done this on like a Thursday afternoon about 4 o'clock.
There we go.
That would have been the better solution.
Yeah, you're going to need it in a couple of days when everything's finalized with your company, Brad.
Absolutely.
I should buy a case and send it to them is what I should probably do at this point.
Well, my wife and I, Paige, got married. It was One Hope Wine that we served at our wedding.
That's
and
great.
We were also at a wedding on this past Saturday preceding our cocktails that we enjoyed together on Sunday. And that was also One Hope Wine was being served at that wedding. So, so we got a lot of history with the brand.
Wine. Yes.
That is terrific. And I do not think of Arizona when I think of wine. So.
Well, the grapes are primary.
Yeah, I know.
I couldn't drink the wine, but I did go on One Hope Wine. I did look.
Awesome.
And I'm now thirsty.
Absolutely.
So, Brett, if people are listening to this podcast and also are thirsty, they know where to go. But if they want to reach out and have a conversation with you, how do they do that?
Absolutely. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. So you can just search me on LinkedIn, Brent Mikosh. Website is tws.finance or smartmoneysimplified.com. Currently on Spotify, and we may, by the time this gets released, we might be up on Apple, we might be up on iHeart, we might be up on all the rest of the platforms as well. Or you can call here at 602-255-0555, and myself, or a member of the team, will answer and love to continue this conversation about anything that we discussed today. Always love hearing from people.
Yeah, no, it is great. And for those of you who are listening for the first time, there's something you can do that's the easiest of everything we've discussed, which is hit the follow button. Become a subscriber. That way you will never miss another episode. Whenever Brent drops a new episode, you'll be notified and you can give it a listen. And I would say, look, if you like it, tell people about it. Spread the word. Word of mouth is always a great thing to help spread the news of a podcast that you enjoy. Until next time, I'm Bill Tucker, thanking you for taking the time to listen today. And I want to remind you that you should just go out and make today a great day. It's your choice or not. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Smart Money Simplified. Have questions about topics covered during the show? Visit our website at www.smartmoneysimplified.com or give us a call at 602-255-0555. Don't forget to click the follow button to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guests and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of the Wealth Stewards or Concurrent Investment Advisors. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning.